Well, that could have gone a whole lot better. But the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday Night Football, primetime, big spotlight in Pittsburgh against the Steelers, was a complete disaster. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Josh Abriscoe, and on today's show, we're recapping what happened in Pittsburgh, and more importantly, what this means for the Chiefs right now, where the team goes from here, what we can take away about this team. And also, I guess we do have to actually go through a little bit of that play-by-play to figure out what on earth left the Kansas City Chiefs with that deficit, with that unbelievably slow start, with that, on every level, miserable performance, really on both sides of the ball, although I can make an argument that the defense held their own for a little bit, but man, it all collapsed rather quickly. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into the nightmare. Sometimes I think we as Kansas City Chiefs fans are bad fans. Not because it's not an incredibly passionate fan base, not because it's not a smart fan base. In my experience, being a Chiefs fan and doing this show, it is largely both of those things. I think this is a well-educated fan base. I think this is an obviously incredibly passionate fan base. But sometimes I don't think we expect enough from this Chiefs team. And this happened last year with the slow start before the Chiefs ended up making a playoff run. But there was a point of demarcation last year where I remember doing a podcast saying, you don't owe the Kansas City Chiefs anything. You give them your fandom, you give the team your support, you buy the merchandise, you go to the games, you watch the games on TV. But we don't owe the Chiefs anything. We sort of have a symbiotic relationship. One thing, though, where I think we do, where maybe we as Chiefs fans let the team down in a way, let the organization down, is by not holding the team to a high enough standard. In this case, looking at where the Chiefs stand right now, looking at the Steelers game, looking at everything is going to something as specific as the Chiefs offense, and I need a lot of wiggle room here to move from you don't owe the Chiefs anything to the offense sucks right now, but give me the time and I think I'll get there for us. Here's what I think we forget a lot of times as Chiefs fans. It could be worse, yes. In fact, we usually see worse than this for the Chiefs, depending on how long you've been a fan of the team. But because it could be worse doesn't mean it shouldn't be better. In this case, for the Chiefs, I can say the opposite to be true. It could be worse, but it should be better. And we have to start with Andy Reid, as I feel like has become the theme now for, I don't know, as long as he's been the head coach of this team now. And because the Chiefs have an established head coach, a guy that we can talk about with some certainty, it makes it easier to, I think, throw him under the bus, which I think is unfair to have that be the intrinsic reason that we throw him under the bus. Well, Andy Reid's established, so let's go ahead and chuck him out the window more quickly. There's not a whole lot of unknown there. But I know we all talk about Andy Reid being a very good coach, and I even want to say right now, and I believe that, but I don't want to say that at this point. I want to say we talk about Andy Reid being a very good coach, but how many slow starts, both to games and to seasons, are we going to suffer through before we go, oh, Andy Reid clearly has a problem here? And again, please keep in mind, the fact that it could be worse doesn't mean that it should not be better. Yes, this Chiefs team started 2-1, and then 2-2. But Andy Reid's unit of this team, when the head coach is offensively minded and calling plays, he bears a grand responsibility for the offensive side of the football. Even though he has two offensive coordinators, it is still, as anyone could tell you, as everyone from Andy Reid to Alex Smith to both offensive coordinators to any fan paying attention will tell you, it's Andy Reid's offense. And Andy Reid's offense has been atrocious. Atrocious early on in all four games so far this season. And I think right now, going, scoreboard, look at their record. They're 2-2, they're 500, this is fine. I think calling to the scoreboard right now and pointing to the record and pointing to last season is telling half-truths about this team. Go to the literal scoreboard for this season. A tweet from Lyle Graverson points this out. He says, San Diego, Houston, and Pittsburgh outscored Kansas City by a combined 63-6 in the first half. Coaching, preparation, execution, and heart, all complete failures. Heart is the hardest thing to quantify, so I'm not even going to bother, frankly. But one thing that we've talked about for years now, Andy Reid's struggles in the two-minute offense. Andy Reid's struggles in adapting during a game. Andy Reid's struggles adapting, most importantly, like between the first and second quarter and between the third and fourth quarter. His halftime adjustments have been usually pretty good. But Andy Reid can struggle to get away from a game plan whenever the game demands it. That's a struggle of Andy Reid that we've all become very accustomed to. All of a sudden, or not maybe not all of a sudden, but now we're seeing, certainly at the beginning of last season and in the beginning of this season, which is all we have right now, Andy Reid's preparation for his team has been severely lacking. 63-6 is the first half score against San Diego, Houston, and Pittsburgh. 63-6. And the Jets game was not pretty by any means. That game isn't included in this. I don't know why Lyle chose to do that, because you can look at the Jets game and say, well, that game was not a incredible testament to the Chiefs' offensive preparedness. I believe 10 of the points in that game were scored by the actual offense. But 63-6 in those three games is a complete failure. And man, I like Andy Reid, and I'm not saying fire Andy Reid. I don't know what I'm saying yet. I don't know what the solution to this is, but we've got to think about it differently. I'm not trying to even make a decision over the bye week, as the Chiefs head into a bye week at 2-2. I'm not saying there needs to be a change right now. I'm saying what there does need to be a change with is how we think and how we talk. I like Andy Reid. I've seen some terrible coaching in Kansas City, but seeing Andy Reid's offense be so inept makes me reconsider his greatness. The mythology of Andy Reid is a little less convincing right now than it's been in the past. And either coaching in the NFL doesn't matter, or Andy Reid has got to take heat for a 63-6 first half spread in three of these four games, with the fourth one being a really just a crummy performance against the Jets. In fact, here's the stat now with the Jets game. In the first half this year, the Chiefs have been outscored 66-23. And in that Jets game, remember, which was 17-3 at the end of the half, seven of those points were on a Demetrius Harris touchdown from a fumble on a kickoff, not a offensive kickoff return for a touchdown, but you know, Cairo Santos kicks it, and then the Jets fumble it straight into Demetrius Harris's arms, and he runs in for a touchdown. That's a fluky touchdown. That's fine. You can count it. You can give the Chiefs every possible break on either side of the ball for the first half this year and say, here's just the raw stat. It's 66-23 in the first half this year for the Chiefs. And again, to repeat myself, to make sure you're hearing this, and I'm not coming off as a crazy person here. We either have to establish that NFL coaching, the importance of NFL coaching, is way overstated, and it really is just about player talent and the depth chart and how good your quarterback is and yada yada. Either that's how it is and coaching doesn't really matter, and the Chiefs with Romeo Crennel and Todd Haley was really just a lack of talent, and those guys would have been fine head coaches if they had elite talent. Or Andy Reid is doing a bad job of preparing this team, and I am so sick of hearing Andy Reid say in post-game press conferences, that's my fault, I gotta be better, I gotta coach better, that falls on me, we gotta be better. You can't keep walking into the same, it's like there's a rake in the ground, just a rake laying on the ground, and Andy Reid continually just waddles right on up, steps on the rake, and like in Tom and Jerry, the handle just smacks him right in the face, and then it falls back down again, and then he just keeps trying to walk that direction, and I just now have this visual of Andy Reid just getting beat in the face over and over again by a rake handle that he keeps stepping on because he hasn't figured it out yet. Maybe the fans are getting hit in the face with the rake, and the rake is Andy Reid after games, so that's my fault. I gotta be coach better. Please, Andy, please do something about it. Or quit. I don't know. from Arrowhead Addict, this is, I think this is a really good point from the Steelers game specifically. So the way Reed and Smith run the offense holds back Macklin, Conley, Kelsey, etc. It's asinine. Either trust the quarterback or get another one. Man, I am the last guy on the throw Alex Smith away bandwagon, because I've seen horrific quarterback play and I've seen really good things from Alex Smith. But this is genuinely reasonable. Either trust the quarterback or get another one. Andy Reid has to trust his quarterback, and it does seem like Andy Reid does not trust Alex Smith. Unfortunately here, I think the problem isn't with Alex Smith not being trustworthy. I think the problem is with Andy Reid being unwilling to give trust away. Who would Andy Reid trust? Does that player exist? Would Andy Reid trust Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in his prime? Would Andy Reid trust Ben Roethlisberger? Ben Roethlisberger loves to throw 40-yard passes that end up getting caught and then taking another 25 yards for touchdowns. If you don't remember that, just go ahead and flip on the game tape from Sunday night. Would Andy Reid want to deal with that? I don't think Andy Reid would ever draft Ben Roethlisberger. I don't think Andy Reid wants that guy. And maybe it's Donovan McNabb. Is that the answer? Where Donovan McNabb earned Andy Reid's trust? Andy Reid still had plenty of times whenever he really hamstrung the Eagles' offense. But he seemed to have trusted Donovan McNabb more. And even beyond that, this is who Andy Reid picked. Andy Reid wanted Alex Smith. They went and got Alex Smith. They have not been in any hurry to replace Alex Smith. Who does Andy Reid trust? If that guy does exist, Chiefs aren't getting him anytime soon. Because maybe what? It's Carson Wentz? It's the next Carson Wentz, which is such a ridiculous thing to say already, as if he is the second coming. But what are the Chiefs going to do? They're going to trade up to the first or second pick next year, find a quarterback that Andy Reid really trusts, and then either that works and this is an average team, or it doesn't work and the team becomes, you know, absolutely crippled for resources in the future with future draft picks. I don't know if that guy exists. And I think this debate about Andy Reid is extremely interesting. During the game, my timeline on Twitter became very binary very quickly. And what I mean by that is that there were generally two conflicting schools of thought and not a ton of nuance on it. In the rage of, you know, every fan during the game, the rage was often met with people citing Andy Reid's record since the losing streak last year had ended and the fact that he won a playoff game last year. But I think Chiefs fans have a little bit of royal syndrome right now. And if you're in Kansas City, you saw the Royals now just finished the year 500, but you saw them 2 years ago make the World Series and a year ago win it. And I think Royals fans were, for a very long time, were so beaten down that getting to 500, getting to above 500, getting to the wild card game, those were little victories on their own. I think Chiefs fans have that right now. We're so used to losing that we're letting our team ride on slightly above mediocre production for too long here. And I think this showed up in a tweet from former Chiefs guard and brother of right tackle for the Chiefs, Mitchell Schwartz. Jeff Schwartz tweeted, quote, "It's a bad game. Reid has made the playoffs 2 of 3 seasons there. Everything will be okay." The problem here is the definition of okay. Okay, what does okay mean? Okay means a wild card berth and maybe one playoff win? Is that okay? Because I think that's what Jeff Schwartz means. I think he says he's made the playoffs 2 or 3 years, it'll be okay, they'll make the playoffs again. Maybe they get another nice matchup in that first round, maybe they get another playoff win, then what? That's not good enough anymore. That's not okay anymore. As a team gets better, the expectations rise. You could go listen to any old show from over this offseason, and I'm sure you could not find me saying that the Chiefs winning a single playoff game is a successful season in 2016. Last year it was. Last year, breaking the playoff streak, breaking that losing streak, was a successful season. This year it isn't. This year, that is a stagnant season. Not winning a playoff game this year is a regression. A successful season is a step forward, which is 2 playoff wins or more, God forbid. We can't let this be okay. We can't let 500 be okay. We can't let a wild card berth and a loss in the first round, or even a win in the first round and a loss right after that, we can't let that become okay. We're so used to that being better than okay. We're so used to that being a successful season that now, whenever the expectations went up appropriately, I may add, when expectations went up, now we're going, well, maybe that's on us. Maybe we just expected too much. No, you did not. You are not expecting too much. If you expect Andy Reid and the Chiefs to come out of the bye week and then go to Oakland and win, and then all of a sudden end up stringing together a really incredible second half of the season again, or I guess last three quarters of the season, and end up going 11-5 and winning the division, and then going to the playoffs, maybe getting a bye, then winning a game, getting the AFC Championship game. If you are expecting that, good. Don't stop expecting that. I wouldn't be predicting that. I am not predicting that on any level. But I expect it. I expect it of a team that asks to be thought of as successful. A team that wants to be thought of as a contender. A team with expectations. The New England Patriots perpetually have expectations. The Denver Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, lost a lot of pieces. They had, I think, for most of their fan base and for most of the NFL, had lowered expectations. They are exceeding those now. The Oakland Raiders, they've been investing and taking steps up. So their expectations increase. They're now meeting those. If you don't have expectations for your football team, I don't know what you're watching. I don't know what you're rooting for. I'm not rooting for this team to go 500. I will not have this team be a wild card team, lose in the first round, and then claim that they're moving in the right direction. This looks like a team in regression right now. After everything we've talked about over this entire offseason, saying, all right, this is the year where the Chiefs finally build. They build on what they've established. This is the step forward. And I'm not okay with that. And this game, if you're still listening, and if you are, like, really riled up about that opinion, I'm guessing you would have turned off the show by now. But this is, I probably should have mentioned this sooner. This game, losing to the Steelers, is not the end of the season. I'm not calling for the end of Andy Reid. I'm not calling to punt this season. I'm not saying, all right, just play Tyler Bray for the rest of the year, get him some reps, let's see what he can do. This game is not the end of the season. And if you feel like I'm even saying that, then I feel like you just need to listen more closely. This is not the end of the season, but it is the end right now of the illusion of the Chiefs being a title contender. This team looks like a perfect six seed kind of team. And that can be the Chiefs, or it can be the Texans, or it can be the Colts, or it can be one of those mid-level teams, one of those teams that sneaks into the playoffs, you know, is a six-point underdog on the road, loses by a touchdown, and you forget that they ever happened unless you're a fan of that team. That's what this team looks like right now. A team with no identity on offense, a team that can't keep it all straight, a team that it loses to really good teams, contends with mid-level teams like the Jets and the Colts, beats bad teams, and that's kind of what they are. It's a nondescript type of football team right now. And if I had to bet my life on it right now, I would have the Chiefs going 8-8 for the whole season. They can win versus New Orleans, Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, Oakland, Tennessee, at San Diego. Then you lose at Oakland, at Indy, at Carolina, at Denver, at Atlanta, Denver at home. And some of those losses that I have there are against fragile teams and beatable teams. But the Chiefs have to improve before they can talk about, like, winning in Indianapolis. Or getting Justin Houston back on the team to end up beating the Broncos at home. The Chiefs aren't equipped for that right now. So you can say, oh, this team is better than the Colts lost in London to the Jags. Yes, they did, and I don't think the Colts are very good, but right now the Chiefs have a lot of flaws also. If you're going to put the game in Indianapolis, favor the Colts by 3 points, let's see what happens. But I'm not going to predict right now that the Chiefs are going to go to Indy and win after getting just torched by a very good quarterback with some nice weapons. Colts can do that. What's this defense going to do against the Colts? What's this offense going to do against anybody ever? The Steelers defense, there's no Troy Polamalu anymore. I feel like maybe this is a generational thing for me. I feel like I always kind of have that assumption of, the Steelers defense has got to be good. It's not good. The Steelers defense is not good right now. The Colts defense is not good. But what's it going to take for this offense to show up? We saw a real bright spot in the second half of the Chargers game. And since then, I'm kind of waiting on anything else. And after that game, I said that I don't think that the Chiefs are the first half of the Chargers game, and I don't think the second half of the Chargers game. I think the Chiefs are the entire Chargers game. A team with dualistic tendencies, with dualistic identities of bright spot, dark spot, bright spot, dark spot. And I think we're seeing that play out. And we saw it play out in a very, very dark way on Sunday night. And at this point, I am pessimistic. I am concerned. I do have doubts in Andy Reid and this offense and Bob Sutton and the coordinators of all shapes and sizes and positions. I'm not punting on the season. I feel better about the team right now, and especially their playoff chances, than I did after week 6 last year. 1-5 teams don't make the playoffs. 2-2 teams certainly do. The bye week is probably coming at a good time for this team. Give them a chance to recalibrate. But right now, just because they're 500, because they could be 1-3, and frankly, in a lot of cases, were very, very, I mean, like, should have been 1-3. Because they could be 1-3, because they could be 1-5 like they were last year, because it could be worse, doesn't mean that it shouldn't be better. And for Andy Reid, for the offense, for this Chiefs team as a whole, right now, after 4 weeks, it should be better. At some point during the game, when the game was already over, so I don't know, like after the first 5 minutes, I put out a poll asking who should call the plays for the Chiefs after the bye week. The bye week is plenty of time, gives plenty of time to recalibrate something in the team. Doing it with the play caller would be fascinating, and I had just seen someone tweet about how Andy Reid should not be calling plays, which at this point I can't really fight very fervently. So I just threw it out there, and the options were Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, and Brad Childress. Brad Childress won the poll with 57%. Matt Nagy was second with 28%. Andy Reid was last with 15%. The head coach, the offensive mind, the guy who has been calling the plays, the guy who was calling the plays during the end of the Chargers game, is getting 15% of the support from the fan base. And it's unscientific. It's a small sample size, I know. But it is so, and it was at a bad time for Andy Reid's play calling for me to ask a poll of who should be calling the plays. But I think that matters, and to go back to the previous point a tiny bit, I'm glad that there is that unsettling, like, what, this isn't good enough attitude coming from Chiefs fans, because I think we let it be good enough too often. Then to try to, like, brighten the darkness even a tiny bit before we go into the actual play-by-play, I tweeted the poll out, and then people started responding with answers that weren't on the poll. So then I just asked, tweet me, who should call the plays for the Chiefs? Who would be a better option than Andy Reid, Brad Childress, or Matt Nagy? Here are my favorite responses for who should call the plays going to Oakland in 2 weeks for the Kansas City Chiefs. We have Stevie Wonder. We have 2 votes for Charlie Weiss. We have Todd Haley. Bill Self getting a vote. The lady with the sledgehammer from that movie Misery. Anyone from the Chiefs' entire history was basically offered. Someone said we should get an Xbox on the sideline and just continually hit Ask Madden. That's my favorite, I think, so far. This is actually my favorite. Who should call the plays for the Chiefs in Oakland? Just get the defensive coordinator from the other team. Just let them do it, because it wouldn't actually matter. It would make no difference. Just let the other defensive coordinator call the plays so he just would know what's going on. Another option, Big Bird. And finally, anyone except the 2 people stacked on top of each other who are currently inside of Andy Reid's jacket. Nice work, everybody. There are some options that I think the Chiefs should consider for who should call plays for the Chiefs for the rest of the season. A lot of those people who tweeted me answers for that are also Patreon supporters of this show. If you don't know what Patreon is, you can go to patreon.com/RTK for more information. Patreon is basically a virtual tip jar. You go out to dinner, you get nice service from your waiter or waitress, you leave a tip on the receipt. With Patreon.com, you can go to a URL specific for what it is that you're supporting. In this case, it would be this exact podcast, the Roughing the Kicker podcast. That's why it's Patreon.com/RTK. You can go there and leave basically a monthly tip, $5, $10, $20, to keep this show running at this high quality. In months past, Patreon supporters helped me upgrade to this wonderful Blue Yeti microphone that I use now twice a week. That is just my favorite, and also makes everything a whole lot easier. But it helps me be able to make these shows on a twice a week basis. Makes it to where I can spend a little more time making the show as good as possible, and then also upgrade things like hardware, software, hosting whenever that becomes a need. And a lot of people have been doing that now for quite a while. I'm extremely thankful to these people. Starting in the $20 group, people have been supporting the show for a while now. Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44 on Twitter. Don Beal, at Don Beal 32. Andy Simpson. Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh_. Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy. And the $10 group is Christine Roadlander, at C. Roadlander. And Todd Sullivan, at Tito Solovino on Twitter. And then the $5 group is Josh Beadle. $20 group gets you a shout out and your Twitter handle shouted out, plus any question you can fathom, I will answer on the show. It can be about the Chiefs, the NFL, elsewhere. It can be about life, sports, politics, dating, love. I mean, usually it's a Chiefs question, though. And the $10 group is the name and Twitter shout out, and then $5 group, I will say thank you to your name because I want to, because I want to say thank you to you. So that's patreon.com/RTK. You can leave a virtual tip if that is what you would like to do to help support this show. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and be sharing this show with the people that you think would enjoy it. As you do that, the show is able to grow, and that is my ultimate goal, which is incredible international fame based off of a Chiefs podcast. Pittsburgh Steelers 43. Kansas City Chiefs 14, and it was never actually that close. Honestly, in a moment of openness here, I'd like to share with you, I don't really want to do this. I don't really want to go through the step-by-step of the game. We're going to go through maybe the first half or so, and my notes for this game ended up looking like the rest of the four preseason games, where there were significant notes taken at the beginning whenever the game still mattered. By the fourth quarter, by the time it was, you know, Tyler Bray throwing to Frankie Hammond, or in this case, Alex Smith throwing to Travis Kelce for a touchdown, nothing actually mattered. So we're just going to see how this goes. We're going to relive in some of that misery together and see what we can learn from it. Touch on the inactives really quick. Phillip Gaines was inactive for this game, something I certainly did not see coming, and something that I did see coming, so that was going to be a gigantic problem, and it was, like, immediately. Other inactives, Tyler Bray, obviously, D'Anthony Thomas, who can never be active for anything, apparently. Charkhandrick West was out, which we expected. Jordan Devey was out, and Ja Reed was another inactive offensive lineman. Sam Barrington was the final inactive. The offensive line still living in a constant state of flux. On Sunday night, had Fulton, LDT, and Parker Anger to shuffle through the guard spots. Not like any of that mattered. So the Chiefs started on offense. God, this is gonna be hard. The Chiefs started on offense. Tyreek Hill and Nile Davis were both back to take the kickoff. Davis returned it to the 22, keeping in mind that touchback takes you to the 25 now. And it started off so well again, like with the Jets game. Like, oh, look at this. Oh, little dart. There's a little bit of action. What's going on here? Smith had quick strikes to Macklin for 15 and then to Conley for 17. Two first downs in a row. Then the third play of the game, Jamal Charles, who was not on that inactive list because he did play. Jamal Charles came into the game, and Smith missed him on a little wheel route out of the backfield, which was discouraging. Second down, Smith rolled left, and Fulton got beat, and then Hayward got the sack. Seth Keyser tweeted at MN Chiefs, real MN Chiefs fan on Twitter, "No idea why you would call plays with a rolling pocket against this pass rush. It just creates problems when the regular protection should be just fine." The Steelers' pass rush had been horrific going into this game. I think that is a very, very good insight. Don't make Alex Smith move and make the offensive line have a harder time protecting him whenever the pass rush opposing you has not gotten pressure on anybody all year long, but Andy Reid and I disagree on some things. Third and 15, the Steelers jumped off sides. Chiefs didn't do anything with the free play. Smith missed Conley. Then on third and 10, Smith rolled right, found nobody, chucked it out of bounds, and Colquitt punted it, and it landed on the 5. A nice start, got nothing. Pretty used to that one by now. And then something else I'm pretty used to. First play of the game. Steelers started off with a 50-yard pass from Roethlisberger to whoever it was over Marcus Peters. I've blocked that out of my memory, and I'm sorry. And I will not apologize for my ignorance. That is just to try to keep my mind from being lost in these nightmares forever. An incompletion over the middle, and then a short pass to Le'Veon Bell got Pittsburgh to 3rd and 2. D4 jumped off sides, gave the Steelers a free play on the first down. Then holding on the Steelers pushed them back to 1st and 20. Justin March shut down a run for no gain, and a shaky pass by Big Ben fell to the ground, and it was 3rd and 20. And then D Ford and Tom Bahali forced Big Ben to step up, and Dontari Poe smothered him. Poe and Ford combined for the sack on that. That was a nice play. It took a couple of penalties, but the Chiefs did end up stopping the Pittsburgh offense there. Sam Mellinger tweeted that at that point, D Ford had led the Chiefs with 1.5 sacks on the season, which is horrific. Derek Johnson with Le'Veon Bell on that play was a huge factor. That coverage was fantastic. So the Steelers end up punting back to the Chiefs, and Tyreek Hill fields the punt and brings it to the 24. The offense then did less than nothing, like less than just punting it, because Spencer Ware got the carry and immediately got stripped. It was his third fumble of the year. Steelers get the ball back, and it was a real gut punch. For an offense that started the first drive pretty well and then, you know, petered out, to then have a defense started very poorly but then stood up, then to give the ball right back in such a terrible, terrible spot was incredibly discouraging. Back on defense, D Ford stuck with Le'Veon Bell in a screen-type throwback in the pocket. Then Sammy Coates got a reverse, and Daniel Sorensen didn't bite, so it was 3rd and 9. But then on 3rd and 9, Roethlisberger finds a wide-open Darius Heyward-Bey for the touchdown. DJ White bit on the wrong route, and yes, it looked like the 6th-round draft pick rookie was struggling against the Steelers' offense. That makes sense. And then the Steelers, by the way, which now feels like rubbing it in, at the time was just kind of gutsy. The Steelers went for 2 and got it on a pass to Marcus Wheaton. The secondary had been so good. Marcus Peters, who is a gambler, is so much more steady seeming when he's opposite Phillip Gaines, who cannot be beaten on big plays very often. DJ White looked like Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper, and for the Chiefs to have traded away Marcus Cooper, some veteran depth, and then to cut Kavari Russell just left them with so little depth here. Steven Nelson played a pretty nice slot and has done that for 4 weeks now. He needs to stay there. He cannot play the outside. The slot is for Steven Nelson. On the outside, if I offered the average Chiefs fan $100 to say, all right, you've got Phillip Gaines and Marcus Peters, but if one of them gets hurt, DJ White is playing, then what happens at corner? What if DJ White gets hurt? Or what if, God forbid, Marcus Peters gets hurt? Who steps in next? The 5th corner on this roster? Kenneth Acker. Kenneth Acker, who was only active whenever Gaines was hurt, and I don't remember hearing his name one time. I don't know if he got a single snap in this game. I don't really care to go look it up right now. Kenneth Acker is your 5th guy, and this is a team that And listen, Marcus Cooper had a lot of problems, but just letting Cooper go and then also releasing your 2nd draft pick, Kavari Russell, for reasons we still don't actually understand, is just bleeping infuriating. Chiefs get the ball back, Spencer Ware gets a carry for nothing, Charles gets a carry for a few, Smith hits Tyreek Hill for 6 and the first down, then Smith tries to lob a check down to, I think, Spencer Ware, who got knocked down anyway. Hayward tipped it up, the Steelers picked it off and returned the interception into a touchdown, did not return it, turned the interception into a touchdown on the next play with a touchdown pass to Antonio Brown that turned the game to a 15-0 score, and at that point, just 2 immediate touchdowns off of 2 turnovers. And at this point, Adam Teicher said on Twitter, for a team with 1 offensive touchdown in the last 2 games, a 15-point deficit has to look insurmountable. And it absolutely was. It just never got better. This was it. I mean, this Chiefs offense, for all of its flaws, for all of the things that it can do and all the things that it can't do, it certainly cannot be giving away free points off of the hand of a conservative Alex Smith and out of the arms of a traditionally very stable Spencer Ware. If those guys are giving the opposing offense points, you just don't need to show up for the game. Just stay home and rest up for the next week. The Chiefs have zero chance of winning games whenever Alex Smith is throwing interceptions and Spencer Ware is fumbling the ball. It's simply not going to happen with this iteration of the team. Back on offense on the kickoff now. Davis returned the kick from the end zone to the 2. I'm going to let that one... I'm just going to actually read that again, but slower this time because I'm upset. On the kickoff, now Davis returned the kick from the end zone all the way out to the 2-yard line. I am over Nile Davis. I've had enough. He can go now. Then from the 2-yard line, I'm sorry. I am. I can't. I hate reliving this. From the 2-yard line, there's a 12-yard pass to Demetrius Harris, got the Chiefs a first down. Smith went to Conley for 8, then Tyreek Hill got a sneaky in-motion handoff for a loss of 2. Then on 3rd and 4, Smith got pressured, threw it in the general direction of Jeremy Maclin. It landed, like, in his zip code, probably, but that's it. James Harrison was going to murder Alex Smith. DeMarcus Robinson had a false start on the punt, and then Dustin Colquitt on the punt hit it to the Steeler 45. Which was not a good punt. And really, at this point, also, nothing good was happening. And then, to actually put it away completely, the Steelers ran for nothing and then whipped it to Antonio Brown for a 38-yard touchdown over Steven Nelson, which is not a fair fight. I do like Steven Nelson. I think he's doing a good job out of the slot. I think he's the best option there that the Chiefs have had in a little while. I'm encouraged by the growth of Steven Nelson, but having Steven Nelson by himself one-on-one against Antonio Brown is not a fair fight. That turned it into a 22-0 deficit. Brandon Kiley on Twitter, I think on Monday actually tweeted this, but I don't know if he's rewatching the game or if this is late Sunday night or what, but this had an interesting conversation that I want to talk about here a little bit amidst this recap garbage. Brandon tweeted, "Hey, Chiefs, maybe you shouldn't leave your completely overmatched cornerbacks on an island against some of the best, maybe against some of the best quarterbacks in NFL history." And then I was retweeting that and saying that that tweet could be about like a dozen games over the last 3 years. Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, pick anybody the Chiefs play and then lose to. Whenever you're leaving your corners on an island against very good receivers, future Hall of Fame receivers like Antonio Brown, and future Hall of Fame quarterbacks like Ben Roethlisberger, you're making gigantic mistakes. And Brandon tweeted back saying that Bob Sutton is a confusing man. He said, I'm not actually 100% convinced that Bob Sutton is, in fact, a good coordinator. And, man, I don't feel like this is a knee-jerk thing. I don't think this is an absurd thing to talk about. Brandon and I in this conversation ended up sort of getting to the point of, you know, is Bob Sutton actually a good defensive coordinator? Or, as Brandon pointed out, does he just had really incredible defensive talent? And if anything could make a defensive coordinator look insanely better than he actually is, it'd be having two elite pass rushers in their prime, Justin Houston and Tom Bahali. It could be having the one of the greatest inside linebackers of a generation in Derek Johnson. It could be having a really, really good corner in Sean Smith and a very good young corner in Marcus Peters. There is some Dontari Poe and some really great talent across the defensive line. There's a lot of defensive talent in these years with Bob Sutton. And I think it's a fair question. I really do. And I don't want to be knee-jerk reaction guy. I don't want to be on the edge of a cliff ready to fall into a spike pit filled with my own words whenever Bob Sutton and Andy Reid whip this team into a playoff contender again. Like I don't want to do that. However, I lost a lot with Bob Sutton after the Colts game. Because it's hard for me to understand exactly how you let that happen, how you let Andrew Luck come back from that much of a deficit. And ever since then, we've seen Bob Sutton do some very, very good things with this team, but we've seen him do very good things whenever he has very good pieces and I touched on earlier, I do think in a lot of cases we overrate the importance of coaches in the NFL. Give me a team with a very mediocre coach, with very mediocre coaching and elite talent over elite coaching and mediocre talent most of the time. I will take that. I feel like Bill Belichick is kind of like maybe the lone exception to that, where I would say I would rather have Bill Belichick in a mediocre roster than, spin a wheel, Bill O'Brien and an elite roster. But give me Bill O'Brien in a roster with every piece you could want, and I'll take that 99% of the time. Give me your average coaching. However, with Bob Sutton, with the lore that we have for him that has been permeated by Andy Reid and, us as Chiefs fans and the Jets and everything, he needs to be able to do more with less. He needs to be able to take his limited resources and produce any sort of pass rush. That's on him. He has Dee Ford and Tom Bahali and Frank Zombo and some mediocre talent as pass rushers. But he's got a really, really incredible defensive line. He's got Eric Berry for whatever he's worth. He has enough pieces to be able to get pressure more consistently than this defense actually does, and to not give up this many points. However, I will say that at this point in the game, the Chiefs were giving up exclusively points based off of incredibly short fields. The first touchdown was based off of Spencer Ware's fumble. The second touchdown was based off of Alex Smith's batted up interception. The third touchdown was based off of a very short field from a bad punt. The defense wasn't the sole problem here, but I do have my concerns about Bob Sutton. Back on the actual game, Demarcus Robinson and Tyreek Hill were back for the kickoff because Niall Davis had ruined his last opportunity. Hill took it to the 28. Smith almost got whacked from behind on a pass but missed Spencer Ware. Then on 2nd and 10, Smith scrambled for a couple. 3rd and 8, Smith missed Spencer Ware in a good matchup streaking downfield, and that one was on Alex Smith. That one was another gut punch. Chiefs punt back. Marcus Peters had a nice pass breakup and almost a pick on 2nd down, but then 3rd down, Ben Roethlisberger to Antonio Brown for a 1st down, something that you could just tattoo on the inside of your eyelids so you remember it whenever you're sleeping tonight. 2nd and 6, another sack. That was nice. Then 3rd and 14, Ben scrambled for less than a 1st. There was holding anyway. It didn't matter. Sam Mellinger tweeted, though, Dee Ford was doubled and held on that play. This game is really weird, and he was right. Dee Ford was actually, being worth actually blocking. But then on 3rd and 29, after that holding penalty, Le'Veon Bell got more yards than he should have, but not enough for the 1st down. Steelers punt it back. Hill gets the return all the way to the sideline, runs to the end zone along the other sideline. It was a stupendous return, corner to corner, and 3 flags were thrown on the play, and I hate special teams penalties so much. I think if you're a long-time listener to this show, I want to add that to my unofficial list of things that ruin my day with this Chiefs team. On throwing the ball short of the 1st down marker on 3rd down, that's probably number 1. Anything to Albert Wilson is number 2. Jet sweeps with slow players is number 3. And penalties on special teams, I think, is number 4. I think those are my things right now that just absolutely ruined my day. Jeff Rosen tweeted, Tyreek Hill won't get the touchdown here, but he's not just fast, he's strong. He shook off whatever should have been a tackle, right after he fielded it. I'm very excited about Tyreek Hill, and he had a really nice play later in the game that I'm sure I'll talk about a tiny bit. He is a legitimate player because of what Jeff Rosen tweeted there. He's not just crazy fast and very quick and has good hands, and later on for his touchdown that we'll talk about later, had great concentration, which he looked like a wide receiver, but he has the physical ability to deal with getting hit around in an NFL game. That's something that Dexter McCluster and DeAnthony Thomas had never had. On offense, then, speaking of two of my least favorite things, a screen to Albert Wilson. Drink on that one. That was good. Also, it worked. It was fine. I don't care that it worked. You still have to drink. If there's a screen to Albert Wilson, you're drinking. No, I don't care how long it goes for. And then after that, it was followed by a check down to Hill for nothing. Third and five, handoff to Spencer Ware, who gets the first down. First down, then Smith panics in as the pocket slides backwards. He spins around, ends up getting sacked anyway. That was on Smith panicking too soon. Second down, Kelsey gets a screen pass for nothing. Third and 12, Alex Smith to Conley for the first down. Throw the ball downfield whenever it's third and long. Nice job, everybody. Gold stars, merit badges, whatever it is you need to get yourself moving on this one. Because, again, if you're playing the drinking game of just drink when you're sad, which is, I think, just how this works, there was a quote from the broadcast. It just, I promise, it just said, "Niall Davis stopped at the line of scrimmage. That's a drink. That's a shot. That is the rest of the bottle. Whatever it is you have to do." Now Davis getting a handoff and then getting stopped at the line of scrimmage is perfect. And then on third and 11, there's a tip ball. Albert Wilson tried to catch it with one hand, didn't catch it because he's Albert Wilson, who hasn't apparently caught anything other than maybe a cold over the offseason. Just worthless. Dustin Colquitt punts it into the end zone. Steelers get the ball and made a lot of little plays for a long time. At this point, nothing mattered. This is whenever I got very nihilistic. There was no meaning. There was nothing existential worth our time. It is just sitting and watching a dissection of your team. So the Steelers starting together, a lot of little plays. None of it actually mattered. And then a touchdown from Ben to Jesse James past Daniel Sorensen. It was 10 plays, 80 yards, made it 29-0. Just nothing mattered. But it was the first drive over that 40 or 45-yard mark that the defense had allowed to end in points in this game. So that drive was on the defense. That was the Steelers' offense just stripping down the Chiefs' defense. But that's 7 of those 29 points that actually were on the defense at that point. After that, it kept getting worse. But in that moment, it was not really the fault of the defense. The back on offense, Smith hit Macklin across midfield and did some other stuff that didn't matter. Hit Macklin again on a monsoon. And then with 8 seconds left, Andy Reid was just perfect. Down 29 points, he had Cairo Santos come out to kick a 48-yard field goal in a monsoon, and I was just begging for any benevolent deity to just take my life in that moment, or at the very least make me unconscious and allow me to sleep through halftime and the second half. I was granted no such grace, and I watched Cairo Santos miss it, because of course he did. It was in a monsoon. Colquitt couldn't handle the snap. It was in a monsoon, down 29 points. Some people on Twitter, I can't remember who all it was, but some people on Twitter were suggesting that the first, like, hour of this show would just be me sighing into the microphone. And if you're listening now, whoever it was that tweeted me that, I hope you're happy, because at this point in the narrative, the game just reached halftime. It's 29-0. And the closer the Chiefs have gotten to points is Cairo Santos kicking a missed field goal in a monsoon. I'm splitting up the takes and takeaways here because I asked for some of them at halftime because I figured that a lot of you listening to this show now and a lot of you at the time on Twitter were going to bed at halftime because you should have been. So I got a bunch of takes and takeaways from halftime. I want to talk about those now, then we'll go back into actually what happened in the second half. From Keyshawn Brown at ChiefPriest_25, I can take a loss, but an ass kicking is BS, and it is. He also said, my favorite thing, everyone is overreacting, including me. Good night. That's just about perfect. That's the exact tone of my entire timeline, of my entire being. Everyone is overreacting, including me. Good night. From Billy at Chocolate Shake on Twitter, I think the Steelers have got most of the takeaways, just saying, nice. We can't defend a pass or play a first half, seemingly, ever. From Andrew Dowdswell, who was on the show a while ago to talk about Brexit, said, as the RTK English official, a 3:11 a.m. game with work in the morning makes me depressed. That's all I can bring myself to say. From James Baker, the cheerleaders have more balls than our coaching staff. From Keyshawn Brown again, they might be the most unprepared team in football. You can't win the division playing like this. Yep. That's exactly right. You can't. And Andy Reid, I just a little bit ago watched Andy Reid's post-game little video from the Chiefs Facebook page, and it just started off with saying, listen, we weren't prepared. We got to be better. We got to prepare better. And the guy interviewing him asked, well, you know, I know how hard you guys prepare. Was there anything the Steelers did that surprised you guys that you weren't ready for? And Andy Reid said no. So in a span of like 30 seconds, he said, listen, we weren't prepared. That's on me. But we expected all that to happen, basically. We just weren't going to win that one. Drives me insane. After the half, the Steelers got the kickoff, drove down the field, and DJ White got turned around in the red zone. Touchdown, Marcus Wheaton, 36-0. Chiefs technically got the ball back after that, but believe it or not, they didn't do much. On 3rd and 21, there was a screen to Spencer Ware, and then they punted on 4th and 7, because when you're down 36-0, go ahead and play it safe, just punt it away as often as possible. Believe it or not, the Steelers actually punted back. The Chiefs got the ball back, drove a little, converted it to 4th down. Smith aired it out to Hill down the sideline, and just barely had it batted away. I wish they would have done that again. That play's going to work this year. They just did it about 25 minutes too late in the game at that point. Just wait until it's completely over. That deep pass to Hill is going to work this year. Probably several times. But it's only going to happen with the team down by, I don't know, 4 damn touchdowns. A nice play to Chris Conley after that, then to Jeremy Maclin, then later another really amazing catch by Conley, dragging his toes along the sideline after a lob over the defender. A really beautiful play from Smith to Conley. That was great. I wish it mattered literally at all. Second and goal, Travis Kelce dropped a touchdown. Third and goal, pass batted up. Fourth down, fourth and goal, touchdown dropped by Ross Travis. I have a pair of those NFL quality wide receiver gloves. I got a pair for free like several years ago, and I don't have not the NFL brand. The brand is Cutters, I believe, for the gloves that I have. And especially you get them a little wet, get the dust off of them. And that pass becomes virtually undroppable. Like, those gloves are, the NFL quality ones are shockingly sticky. It is hard to drop passes in them most of the time. I don't know how Ross Travis dropped that. Travis Kelce shouldn't have dropped his, blah, blah, blah. It was an 18-play drive with 5 drops and no points. So turnover on downs there. I don't know if I've ever seen an 18-play drive, or at least in recent memory. Certainly not one with so many passes that it had 5 drops and didn't end in any points whatsoever. That was truly remarkable. We can move on to the fourth quarter now, because we are close to the sweet release of death of this game. The Chiefs went on a 7-play, 47-yard drive that ended in a Tyreek Hill touchdown on a really fantastic catch. He took a hit out of the slot, he located the ball, bobbled it up, found it again, caught it, and fell into the end zone. Truly, that kind of concentration is mandatory for NFL wide receivers. He is more than just speed. In fact, he's more than just speed and physicality. He appears to actually be able to locate a pass. And that's not sarcastic. That can genuinely be a difficult thing for a lot of those little guys to be able to do. He's got some great physical tools. Sounds like he's going to be able to actually concentrate like an NFL receiver. I'm excited for the future of Tyreek Hill on this team, genuinely. Le'Veon Bell, by the way, after this, had an embarrassingly effective run from the midfield to within the 5-yard line. Then D'Angelo Williams walked in the touchdown. I don't think he got touched. It doesn't matter. It was 43-7 at that point. Then the Chiefs get the ball back. Some stuff happened. Jamaal Charles was in the game for some absolutely godforsaken, logic-forsaken reason. On a wet field, a sloppy field, the guy with it just had... Just his first game back from ACL surgery is out there in a game that is 43-7. That was truly beyond my understanding. My own, you know, small human mind dealing with the deistic tendencies of Andy Reid. So Charles was in the game. Spencer Ware got stopped 3 times inside the 10. Smith threw a touchdown to Travis Kelce on 4th and goal that ended up costing me a fantasy football victory against my father, which I'm actually upset about still. But whatever, the Chiefs pad their stats, hit the over on the points. It was 43-14 as a final. And I don't know what else you want from me. Like, what? Ugh. Just truly a disaster. So here's more takeaways. Takes and takeaways from you guys after the game actually wrapped up. A shocking amount of you were still awake and actually watched the whole thing with me. Thank you for hanging out with me on Twitter, by the way. Thank you for making it not such a lonely, lonely experience. Final takes and takeaways from you guys from Kevin. It's pretty bad when Tony Dungy, he said this at halftime, when Tony Dungy didn't know what coverages the Chiefs were using on defense. Yes, that is That is horrendous. When Tony Dungy was literally saying, I don't know what they were doing here. From at Three Gravy Cats on Twitter, somebody needs to be benched or fired. I don't know if anyone can be fired. I don't even know if you're benching people. What actually needs to happen is someone needs to have a shift in mindset, or at least slightly more inclined to deal with change and being able to actually adapt during a game. Because I would like to say, oh, there needs to be an example set here, but I don't know what it is. I don't know who you would bench or who you would fire. You're not benching DJ White. He's not supposed to be playing anyway. That's not his fault. You're not benching Alex Smith. That's not solving anything. You're not benching Spencer Ware. You're not firing Andy Reid right now. You're not firing any of either the half offensive coordinators. You're not firing Bob Sutton. I don't know. At this point, I do think, for as miserable as this game was, the Chiefs' best chance to end up in the playoffs is some continuity. Now, if we're getting to where this team is, 3-6 or 4-8 or something, then fine. Start cleaning house if you want. I'll get there when we get there. I don't think we will see the Chiefs be 4-8 at any point. I think this is a 500 team that when Justin Houston gets back, maybe steal a game in Indy or something, we're talking about, oh, look, they're 10-6 now. Here we go. We have a chance to actually see them in the playoffs again. Now what happens once they get there? From John B., he tweets, more Brexit, please, which made me so happy because I mentioned earlier I talked to Andrew during the offseason right after the Brexit happened because he's a Chiefs fan over in the UK, and it was great. It was the only interview I've done so far on this podcast this season, and I enjoyed it so much. I love the idea that we are now at a point where we're getting dangerously close to this becoming 80% Chiefs and 20% foreign politics on this show. That makes me so happy. Thank you, John, for tweeting that. It brought joy to my cold heart. From Jacob Giles, I decided it was time for some good play calling, so I turned on the PS4. From Mike, why does the NFL hate us? We're never actually good. I don't think the NFL actually hates the Chiefs or Chiefs fans. I think maybe Clark Hunt hates us. I don't know. Or Andy Reid hates good offenses. I'm not sure. From KT Priest, why can't they move the ball like this from the start? The million-dollar question. Andy doesn't call these plays unless they're behind. Dink and dunk too much. I think there is some merit to a dink and dunk offense, or an offense that at least isn't scared to dink and dunk some. A team that can control the clock, that can both have success in the short pass game, on the ground game, and in the more aggressive plays. What happens is, yes, when the dink and dunk becomes the entirety of the passing game. Having no aggressiveness is no way to go about your life in an NFL offense. From Christian Roadlander, for my Twitter stream, I'm glad I chose today to work 16 hours and miss what I would gather was a disaster. Yes, take that away, that you missed an absolute disaster. From Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy, take away, at what point does the, quote, it's only week blank excuse stop? This team has an identity crisis. Yes, it does. This offense has an identity crisis. This defense has an identity crisis. The special teams occasionally have an identity crisis whenever Niall Davis is back there. I don't know what this team is, and neither do you, and neither does Andy Reid or Bob Sutton or John Dorsey or Clark Hunt or Alex Smith. No one knows what this team actually is right now. And I think in that, whenever that happens, whenever no one knows what your team is, you are 500. That's what you are. You're not bad enough to get a nice draft pick. You're not good enough to make a run in the playoffs. You're a 500 team. You are mediocre. You are free of identity. You are an average team with no differentiating qualities. That's just what you are now. And until the Chiefs find their identity somewhere, and maybe it's when Charles comes back, it better not be whenever Justin Houston gets back, because that's too long from now. If they can get an identity before that happens, then maybe there's something to look forward to here. Right now, there's not. Finally, from Miles McLaren, what if the Chiefs roster is the reason they've been winning games? I would keep John Dorsey, make Dave Taube head coach, and replace the rest. I wouldn't do that right now, because again, I think continuity is the best chance this team has to get things back together, and they're at 500 right now. It's 2-2, not even, 7-7. At the same time, I do back to that conversation about Bob Sutton, I also don't think this team is extremely talented right now. I don't think different coaches are going to do a whole lot more with this talent, but I am upset with what these current coaches are doing with this much talent. But I do think that's a very fair question to say, let's look at the talent this team has had. going all the way back from, you know, Herm Edwards' talent and following the stars that have been brought onto this team over the last decade, you know, from Derek Johnson, Tom Bahali, up to Marcus Peters. What of this is what Andy Reid and Bob Sutton have built on their individual sides of the football? And what of it is, well, they've got the right players? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question yet. And because of that, I think it's a good one. If you ever put some money on a football game and scored a big win, only have to wait weeks to collect your cash? Now there are thousands of online players eliminating that wait time by switching over to MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag and stop wasting your time on other websites. Play live, partake in in-game betting, and watch the odds change in real time. When you win, enjoy no-hassle payouts so there's nothing holding you back from your victory cash. Join now and get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Plus, if you sign up and make your first deposit within the first 30 minutes of creating your account, you get another 10% bonus. How do you get that? Sign up and use the promo code KICKER for that 100% bonus up to $1,000. Remember, use the promo code KICKER. Visit mybookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. That's 844-900-2387 to open your account and start winning today. Use the promo code KICKER to get your 100% deposit bonus and show the folks at MyBookie that they're spending their money wisely when they support this podcast. Expert or rookie, visit mybookie.ag. Sign up today with the promo code KICKER. Speaking of gambling, I said some things about what I expected from the AFC West this week. The rest of the AFC West was not especially kind to the Chiefs this week as they fall to 2-2. The rest of the AFC West did some good things here. Now, the New Orleans Saints ended up beating the San Diego Chargers by 1 point, a 35-34 victory for New Orleans, where the Chargers fall to 1-3. The Denver Broncos, most upsettingly, win 27-7. I expected that to happen in Tampa Bay, but the Broncos are now 4-0, and their lead over the Chiefs extends. Most damaging right now, though, in the short term for the Chiefs, the Oakland Raiders are now 3-1 after beating the Baltimore Ravens on the road in a really nice win in a very non-Raidery fashion. 28-27, the Raiders beat the Ravens in Baltimore, and the Chiefs are currently now sitting alone in third place in the AFC West. That is going to do it for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on Arrowhead Addict. com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. As much as I hated the Steelers game, I really enjoyed doing this show about it for you. I hope that together we can continue to have this discussion about Andy Reid and the offense, about the Chiefs as a whole, about expectations and what it means to keep those high as we fight the idea of, because it could be worse, it does not need to be better. I think that's where the Chiefs find themselves so frequently. That's how the last season started. It's how this season is starting, and perhaps this season is also due for a turnaround, but for now, the cynicism lives on, the takes and takeaways live on, but now we have a bye week, the chance for the players to ice up and heal up, a chance for us to watch good offenses, maybe a chance for Andy Reid to continue to not prepare for a game on the Sunday coming up. Oh dear goodness. Thanks for listening, I'm Joshua Briscoe, this is Reffing the Kicker. Bye, Mom. Face.